Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsa midday for the 16th of Sivan. Today's responsa will be from the responsa of Chatam Sofer, a giant of the late 18th and early 19th century. In his Tshuvot, Chelek Aleph, Part 1, Or HaChaim, Siman Lamed Vav, responsum 36. Now he's talking about the issues of hair covering. And there is some question as to whether his ideas will be relevant to halacha today. So I repeat here, as I should have said all the time, that my goal in these responses is not necessarily to say what the halacha is on a topic for us to learn from and act upon, but rather to learn from these giants from our past and see what they said about various issues. And then if one wants to pursue the topic or the conversation, one can on one's own. So here, Chatam Sofer is going to say many interesting things about hair covering, and I think his conclusions will be less necessarily practical for us, although there are those who follow the Chatam Sofer's Pesach ruling on these issues, as it will raise for us the issues to know about in this and other areas of halacha. So he is concerned with the question of women having to cover their hair, and he knows of a tshuva of the Maharam al-Ashkar, who is known for a tshuva that is more lenient when it comes to hair covering, and he's going to explain all of these issues. So, first step, he says, is the Gemara in Brachot points out that Shir HaShirim praises a woman's hair as saying, Sa'arech ke'eder ha'izim, your hair is like a flock of goats, and that makes it sound like it's an erva. And the Rush writes there that that's only for married women. The Gemara says, Se'ar b'isha erva, which would sound like any hair, is an erva. By an erva, we mean something that should not be seen, that is a nakedness of the woman that should not be seen. We're going to see that many of the sources, Chatam Sofer doesn't distinguish it carefully, but many of the sources, as he notes, refer to it in terms of whether a man can say Kriyat Shema when it's around, which might make you think that it's not that it always has to be covered up, but it's only a question of what is a man allowed to do in terms of Kriyat Shema. Chatam Sofer does not go in that direction at all. But that's the Gemara in Brachot, says that Se'ar B'isha is, that the hair of a woman is an erva. The Rush said that's only for married women, because the common practice, he says, is that unmarried women leave their hair uncovered, and therefore that shows that it's not an erva, whereas... And in addition to which, the Beis Yosef quotes the Rashba, and the Rashba says that with married women as well, while it's true that their hair we consider an erva halachically, based on that Gemara, those hairs that are commonly left out of their covering, and their husband is accustomed to seeing them all the time, so that would not be considered an erva in terms of reading Kriyat Shema. He doesn't look there, that's what the Rashba is saying. Interesting to note that the Rashba seems to imply that when we talk about the things that the woman tends to cover or doesn't tend to cover, that he means in terms of what the husband is accustomed to or used to. And whatever the husband is used to seeing would not be a problem for reading Kriyat Shema, for saying Kriyat Shema. There's also no implication, I think, there's no implication that the husband couldn't see other hairs at other times. So, for example, when they're in private together and doing something private together, then he could see all the hairs. So, that's a whole topic of its own. The Chatam Sofer doesn't go there, and neither will we. But he does point out that in Shir HaShirim, there's also a reference to Miba'ad L'tzamateich. Beyond or behind your tzamateich could mean a hat, as we're going to see, or it could mean a veil, or it could mean a mitpachat. So he says here, a kerchief of some sort, perush, shibeach bakra bishnei drachim. He says there's two ways that the pasuk talks about her hair. There's her hair that's nice like the flock of goats, and then there's the second issue, that she's a tznuah, that she is modest about it, that she is chaste about it, that those hairs that are most likely to make her look beautiful if they were open, she covers them miba'ad tzamateich behind. Now, I would have thought it meant the veil, but he says, shemilvad kovash al rosha, o yish latzamet beged hamitzamseim ha'sear. Besides a hat that she has, she also has a scarf of some sort, a kerchief of some sort that she tightly puts around her hair so that it doesn't slip out. Meaning when you're wearing a hat, hair can slip out. Whereas he's understanding the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim to mean that women are very careful not to let any of it slip out. And therefore what the Rashba means when he says those that slip out, he means those that happen to slip out, that it's impossible to get all the hairs to stick in all the time. And those the husband's used to seeing, and therefore they're not an issue in terms of saying Kriyat Shema. That is one issue in terms of hair covering, the question of erva. And what counts as an erva and what's considered, so far the Chatam so far has said, there's both the factor of what's an erva, and then there's the factor of that women tend to, or Shira Shira is praising women for being tznuot and therefore covering that hair. And what he understands the Rashi to mean is that within the context of them covering that hair, whatever happens to slip out, whereas the Rashi seems to have said, whatever women tend not to cover, Chatam Sofer is assuming that it means whatever happens to slip out, that's not going to be a problem for the husband in terms of saying Kriyat Shema, even when that his wife is around with those hairs showing. Another issue is a different sugya in the Gemara, in Ketubot, not in Brachot now, but in Ketubot. The Gemara in Ketubot on Ayin Bet, at the end of the first Amud, on 72a, is talking about, this is an issue of if a wife refuses to abide by certain standards of behavior, what are the standards of behavior where the husband is allowed to divorce her? Now, in terms of allowed to divorce her, one of the crucial issues was monetary payments, because in the time of the Mishnah in the Gemara, the Ketubah, as defined, set up a payment that could be difficult for the husband to come up with, and that was done on purpose so that he wouldn't easily divorce her for no good reason. On the other hand, what if he has a good reason and yet he doesn't have the money? The halacha doesn't want either of them to be stuck, really, but doesn't want him to be stuck with the wife who's behaving inappropriately. So the Gemara lists causes, the Mishnah lists, causes, appropriate causes for divorce that are so valid that he does not have to pay her ketubah. If she acts in certain ways and he decides he wants to divorce her, he would not have to pay her ketubah. So there's something called Dat Moshe and something called Dat Yehudit. And if she violates either Dat Moshe or Dat Yehudit, those would be cause for him to say, I want to end this marriage and not pay the financial penalty. In the discussion there, the Gemara says, what is Dat Yehudit? If she goes outside and her hair is completely uncovered, that's Dat Yehudit, she has violated Jewish custom. And for violating Jewish custom, he's allowed to divorce her with cause, meaning he won't have to pay. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If her hair is completely uncovered, that's a d'oraita problem. That is a biblical prohibition, because the Torah says when it comes to a suspected sota, and a woman is going through the sota ceremony because her husband has warned her not to be alone with a certain man, and then she chose to be alone with that certain man anyway, and therefore there's a test to see whether she committed adultery. That sota situation, part of the experience is that the Torah says, upara et rosh ha'isha. The Kohen should uncover the hair of the woman to embarrass her, to make her feel bad about her behavior, and to show that she hasn't behaved appropriately and modestly and chastely. The Gemara therefore says, that would seem to show that it's a violation of Dat Moshe, meaning of Torah law, for her to go out without her hair covered. And the Gemara's question is, the Mishnah seems to refer to them as two separate cause factors. There's Dat Moshe and there's Dat Yehudit, either one of which would be sufficient for the husband to divorce her. But if the definition of Dat Yehudit is really Dat Moshe, then the same thing. So the Gemara says, De'oraita kalata shapir. By Torah law, if she covered her hair only with kalta, and that the question of what kalta is a question. The Rambam, the Chatam Sofer, quotes the Rambam's definition. The Rambam says that it's a mitbachat, b'roshah d'chasot sa'ara shapir dami, and that Yehudit would be that kalta is not good enough, ad sh'yela od kova. This is the way the Chatam Sofer understands the Rambam. That the Rambam means, kalta is a kerchief that covers the hair, and that Yehudit would be an additional hat. I will note that the Rambam, when he writes it, talks about a redid. He talks about a veil on top of kalta. So the Rambam says that that Yehudit is an addition to the mitpachat, is what the way the Rambam says it. In addition to that mitpachat, she has a redid. Now, redid usually means a veil. The Chasam Sofer assumes that a kova, that a hat, would qualify as well. And then in that Gemara, back in the Gemara, I'm review the Kalta Inba Mishum Perua Rosh. That doesn't qualify as Perua Rosh. And then the Gemara says, what about in a Chatzer, in the courtyard? I mean, it's not a public place, because everybody goes out that way. And therefore, they say, no, we mean that she goes out beyond the Chatzer to a Mavoy, to a more open alleyway where more people come. That would qualify as a problem for Dat Yehudit. So that's the sugya in the Gemara Ketubot, which says there are two levels of hair covering that require. There's the hair covering that is biblically required, and that could be just a kalta would be good enough. And then there's the hair covering that the Jewish women have accepted upon themselves, and that would be an issue of Dat Yehudit. Tosfot there, the Chatam Sofer continues to say that when it comes to that chatzer means her house, and in her room, she's even allowed to have nothing on, whereas the Chasam Sofer understands the Torah Shulchan Aruch and the Bach to think that no, that even in her room, she's got to have some covering. The Beit Shmuel says, according to our custom, that Yudit would be complete uncovering, even in the courtyard in her room, but there's some kind of an Isser. Even if you say that she doesn't go out without a ketubah, there's a problem. So that's where we stand. It seems like we have a group of poskim who assume that there's some kind of hair covering was required because of dat yudit, according to the Chatam Sofer, because of dat yudit, some kind of hair covering was required everywhere, and further hair covering was required the further out that she went. So the Chasam Sofer says, based on that discussion, it seems like you had a discussion about it, but we now have a psak, and the psak was, and the minhag was to follow that. Once there's a minhag to follow that, it becomes a complete requirement of halacha. That's what the Chasam Sofer is going to say. So basically, his argument is going to be that since we have agreed to the interpretation that says that women have to cover their hair with something everywhere, and with more the more public they go, that has become the custom, and then we have to follow it. And he points to a Magen Avraham in Tavkuf Nun Aleph, who says that once people accept a custom, it becomes a halacha for them, and they need a heter nidarim. They need to get a vow nullified before they could change it. So that's an interesting comment that the Chasam Sofer doesn't really pick up on. That according to the Magen Avraham, it seems like even in the case of a custom, there are situations where one could do a heter nidarim, where there could be a nullification of the vow accepting it, and that could change. Chasam Sofer doesn't go in that direction as well. Therefore, he says, it turns out to him that for a woman to go into a place where there are many people there, where the rabbim or mitsuyim, where the public is, she can't go with just a kerchief. That's overet al dat yehudit, and that would be sufficient, Chasam Sofer thinks, even for the husband to divorce her without a ketubah. So that would mean, and this I don't think people do today, which is an interesting comment, that would mean if women were to walk around in places outside of their apartments, outside of their homes, with just a scarf on their head, Chasam Sofer thinks that's a violation of that yudit. That yudit is that they do more than just wear a scarf on their head. V'chatzera, he says, kvar kiblu avot avotenu, even in her courtyard, which would even be in her apartment, our forefathers have already accepted in every place that we've heard of that there are Jews, to say that it's usher, that you can't go out with just a kerchief. And it could be that if somebody does that, it's already dat yudit, and therefore that the husband could, if he chose to, divorce her without paying her ketubah just for doing that. That's what he says. But then he knows of a tshuva of the Maram Alashkar who lived hundreds of years before the Chatam Sofer, where somebody had asked him about the fact that in Arab lands, which for Jews who lived among Arab lands, there were women who were going out, and they were leaving a band of hair between their ears and their forehead uncovered. And the person writing the question couldn't understand it. So the Maharam Alashkar says that was true in the Gemara's time as well. And he points to a Gemara of Bava Batra. The Gemara of Bava Batra is talking about a bunch of issues that I think are really interesting. So I'll come back to them in a second. But one of the points that the Gemara of Bava Batra makes is that women, in the aftermath of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, women would not put on all of their jewelry or all of their decorations they would have were there to be a Beit HaMikdash standing. Were there to be a temple standing, women would decorate themselves more. So the Gemara says, what is the example of what's left out, what she doesn't do? So Amarav Bat Tzid'a. So what's Bat Tzid'a? So there's two interpretations. The Rashbam thinks that they used to put some kind of lotion or some kind of limestone on their hair that would be near their temples to get rid of it. So, and that wouldn't help us with our discussion, but the Aruch said was that those hairs that would come out between a woman's ear and her forehead, which they would leave out, they would have like a strand of hair there, that was a tachshit. They would beautify it, they would put spices on it, and the Ram Alashkar says that in his time, they leave out that hair and they don't put sid on it. They don't put any limestone or anything on it. Ella, they put pisamim, and that's what Chazal said was not allowed in Zeher L'Chorban. In other words, that he's understanding the Gemara to mean that one of the things that we do to remember the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash is that women would not beautify themselves fully, and the common way to not beautify themselves fully was that hair that was left out. They wouldn't put spices on it. They would put something on it that wouldn't make it look as nice as it did. But it sounds like they're not making sure to cover it. And that's the point of the Maharam Alashkar that comes up for the Chatam Sofer. So Chatam Sofer is going to be bothered by the fact that Maharam Alashkar seems to say that that line of hair is not one that's required to be covered, that women could leave that hair out, which goes against everything that he said, and it really goes against it because he had also said, we haven't heard from generations that anybody leaves any hair out. So we'll come back to that in a second. I just don't want to leave that Gemara of Avabatra alone because it's too interesting a Gemara from my perspective to leave alone. The Gemara of Avabatra on Samach Amud Bet says that when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, the second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, there were people among the Jewish people who didn't want to eat meat or drink wine ever. Meaning their point was, we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, how can we enjoy meat, how can we drink wine? It's a remarkable contrast to our times, which is part of why the Gemara strikes me. The memory of the Mikdash was so, the memory of the temple was so raw, the mourning over it was so raw, these people couldn't imagine living a life in which they enjoyed meat and drank wine. Rabbi Yehoshua, an important Tana, wanted to talk to them about it. He says, why aren't you eating meat or drinking wine? They said, how can we eat meat? It reminds us of the sacrifices. How can we drink wine? It reminds us of the Nisu Chayayin, of the wine that used to be poured for a libation on the Beit HaMikdash, on the altar, and it's not there anymore. So he said to them, then don't eat bread because we used to offer flour offerings. And they said, you're right, so maybe we should just eat fruit. He said, well, fruit, you can't eat because then what about the Bikurim, the first fruits that were brought to Yerushalayim, and we don't have that anymore. And they said, we can eat other fruit. So he's trying to push them to show them that they're being too extreme in their position, and they're not buying it. They're buying his extreme, and they're going even more extreme. So finally he wins because he says, so don't drink water. We should have to not drink water because you also used to pour water on the Mizbeach. Now, if I were there and I wanted to be a mechutzah and I wanted to have a little chutzpah, I could imagine there's an argument because Nisuch HaMayim happened once a year, I mean, once a year on Sukkot, a couple of days a year, but it wasn't a regular part of Beit HaMikdash worship. The truth is, I could say that about Bikurim as well. It was once a year, and it was only, and it wasn't even an offering in the same way, and it was only, anyway, I could have imagined arguing the point and saying, no, there's a reason why we should be allowed to eat fruit and drink water, and that's not the same as wine and meat, which was every day on the Beit HaMikdash. It was like part of the daily routine. In any case, they didn't have that answer, or they didn't give that answer, and they were quiet. They understood the point, or they accepted the point. So therefore, he said to them, listen, you can't be extreme about it. Not to mourn at all would be wrong. But to mourn too much is not something that everybody's able to handle, and therefore, we don't make rules. This is a common theme in the Gemara. We don't make rules that people aren't able to handle, and therefore, he said, the way Chazal do it is, the right way to mourn is, you have ways of mourning. Some, one of them being, if you're building a house, you leave a piece of it unplastered. Right? Ama alama, near the door, or towards the doorway, you leave it unplastered. When you have a meal, you don't make a full meal, you leave something on, anyway, all those sorts of things. And one of the examples was that when a woman does her decorations, she leaves something out, and that's how we got to the Maharam Alashkar, who said that based on the Aruch, the meaning is about the hair, and that in his time, women are in fact decorating that hair. It's an example of, over time, people have lost that sense of it. Meaning, in the time of the Gemara, it seems like Jews were supposed to walk around all the time aware of the fact that we lost the Beit HaMikdash and that we're hoping for the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. I'm not sure that we are there now with all Jews, but it is something to remember. That's what the Gemara understood. Jews were supposed to be experiencing their lives daily, and we were supposed to always be remembering that we don't have a Beit HaMikdash. For our purposes, in terms of the question of women's hair covering, it brought the Maharam Alashkar to mention that women were leaving their hair out, and he doesn't seem to be bothered by the fact they were leaving their hair out. He seemed bothered by the fact that they were decorating it in violation of the accepted custom of remembering the Chorban. The Maharam Alashkar also knew of a Zohar that seemed to imply that some hair was a problem. The Maharam Alashkar thought it was only that line of hair that we're talking about for the reason of this, but the Chatam Sofer thinks, no, that if you look at the Zohar, you'll see that the Zohar actually thinks that there's a problem, a Kabbalistic, a mystical problem, with any hair being left out, and thinks that it causes terrible tragedies. It causes poverty. It causes children who are evil, who don't listen to their parents, who don't do the right thing, and other kinds of troubles. Okay. So he mentions that Zohar, the Maharal Malashkar, he doesn't think it's a problem because the Maharal Malashkar and the Chasam Sofer say that according to our Gemara, if you read it according to the Aruch, right, if you accept the Aruch's translation of Batsida, then the Gemara goes against what that Zohar is saying, because the Gemara is very clear. If you translate the words Batsida as the Aruch does, then it means that hair was left out, and therefore it couldn't be the Zohar, or therefore it's seeing the world differently than the Zohar. And in any case, where the Zohar, which is a Kabbalistic text, conflicts with our Gemara, and there are such cases, Chasam Sofer is clear that we follow our Gemara. And so is Maharal Malashkar. And then he writes there also that even the women who come from Christian lands to Arabic lands, so in other words, he, in the reality that the Maharal Malashkar is painting, they in the Arab lands, in Muslim lands basically, women had the custom of leaving certain strands of their hair uncovered, and that was the custom. They thought that fit the Gemara, and they accepted that. So you'd have women who came from Christian lands, and the question was, what do they do? So in general, in halacha, there's an idea called notnim alav chumrei makom sheyatza misham v'chumrei makom shehalach l'sham, that the people who are from one place and they move to another place temporarily, they're planning on going back to their original place, they're supposed to be keeping all of the stringencies, both of the place that they left and of the place where they're found. So if you have a woman from a Christian country, meaning from a Western European country, Spain is a problem there, but anyway, no, from Western European country, who comes to an Arabic land, who comes to Syria for a visit, you know, they're there for 2 months, what does she have to do in terms of her hair covering? The Maharal Malashkar held that they don't have to follow their old custom back home while they're in this Arabic country. They can leave some of their hair out because it's not a minhag of the old country. It's not a chumrah that the people in the Christian countries accept upon themselves, the Maharal Malashkar claimed. It was only because in those Christian countries, in the lands of Edom where these women live, all the non-Jews also covered all their hair. So where all the non-Jews covered their hair, the reason why the women were covering all their hair was because they were just keeping in practice with women, Jewish or not Jewish. And it wasn't a halacha, it wasn't an idea of this is our accepted practice of hair covering. It was an idea of we're following, everybody around us is being this modest in their presentation of the hair, so therefore we have to as well. That's what the Maharal Malashkar says. You'd have to look up historical records to see if that was true in his time, but that's what he says. But the Chasam Sofer is unmoved by that idea. He says, "V'ha'nam ba'artzoteinu, we live now," Chasam Sofer is living in Eastern Europe, we live in a place where everybody around us walks out with their hair uncovered. So that's not applicable to us, and yet our mothers, all the women we know, all the Jewish women we know, did not walk around with their hair uncovered, and they all, Chatam Sofer understands, were worried about this Zohar, and therefore they were very careful that they would never show any of their hair because they were trying to fit in with the Zohar that said there was a big problem with it. And even, were we to have a minyan get together, meaning a court get together, or a bunch of rabbis to get together, who would have said that line in the Gemara says that it's okay, and we would follow the Aruch and not the Rashbam, and we don't have to follow the Zohar. But since they accepted the minhag like the Zohar, so he quotes, there was an important Rav of the generation before him called the Rav Eliezer Stein, who said, minhag oker halacha in these kinds of cases, and therefore it becomes like a halacha kavua, it becomes like a set, fixed halacha, meaning that where there are books that argue with Gemara, let's say a Masechet Sofrim, right, there are these small Masechetot that aren't really part of the Talmud, and they say things sometimes, and let's say they say something that goes against the Gemara, or a Medrash, or a Psikta, or a Zohar, right, the Chasam Sofer throws in, because after all, a Zohar, I think academics assume, is written much later. It certainly came to light much later than in those earlier books. But that minhag, that custom, can in fact uproot the halacha. It becomes a halacha among the Jewish people, and that's the Chasam Sofer says, and that's what the Magen Avraham said. And he gives us a reference to Siman Tov Reish Tzadi, Tziv Katan Chaf Bet, to chapter 690 in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Or HaChaim of paragraph 22, which we'll come to in a second. But basically, so far, Chasam Sofer's claim has been that there is some debate about how much hair has to be covered. There is a Gemara in Brachos that talks about hair being covered, and then talks about the fact that women are modest and cover their hair. So whatever is generally covered, would be covered by that, by the question of Se'ar B'Isha Erva, and what a man, a husband, can say Kriyat Shema near or not near. That's question one. Question two is, or issue two is a Gemara in Ketubot that talks about the difference between Dat Moshe and Dat Yehudit, and the basic understanding of Dat Yehudit was that Dat Moshe was having your hair completely uncovered, outside at least, and then the question was, what qualifies as a chatzer, as a courtyard? Because in a courtyard, it seemed like she could just follow Dat Moshe. Their understanding of Dat Moshe was that she would have her hair completely covered, the Rambam thought with a mitpachat, with some kind of a scarf really covering it, and then going out to a more public place, that Yehudit required that she, over and above that scarf, that kind of kerchief, would have to put something else on as well, either a veil or a hat or something like that. That's the Chasam Sofer's understanding of the definition of Dat Yehudit. He did note that Maram Alashkar, who thought that there were certain hairs, and we've seen that the Rashba also thought there were certain hairs that women left out of those coverings, and those could not be covered by that. But he comes back to Ashkenazi women that he knows of, and from the generations that he knows of, from generations before, who have decided to follow the opinion of the Zohar, and this would be a case of where the custom can even be more stringent than the halacha, and then becomes like the halacha, because the Zohar seems to think that all hair has to be covered, and once you accept a custom, it becomes like a halacha. So as I said before, he referenced us to a Magen Avraham, where the Magen Avraham says that. The Magen Avraham quotes Ramah in the Tshuvot, in the name of the Maharik, that if you have a minhag in a certain place, you should never say that the minhag should just be gotten rid of, even if it's a troubling minhag or it creates problems. There's a case in the Gemara like that, where there are people whose custom was not to travel on a Friday, and they found that very difficult for business, and they were told nonetheless they had to keep the custom. So even where customs create certain hardships, you have to follow the custom. And the Magen Avraham even says that even if that minhag ha-makom seems to go against some kinds of halachos, or they're doing something wrong, custom is a very strong factor and you have to follow it. But then he adds, and the Chassid Sofer doesn't seem to respond to this, then he adds, miu, im nishtaneh ha'inyan me'asher haya bizman ha-rishonim, rash'in l'shanot l'fi hazman. That if the minhag had changed from what it was at the time of the earlier ones, then there is room to change it. So that's not true of the B'nai Baishan, which was the case of the traveling on Friday that he mentioned. The other Gemara specifically said, even though things had changed, you couldn't do it. The Minhag Avraham seems to say that if people accept the minhag for some reason, then the factors completely change, there's room to change it. That would then mean, theoretically, that if hair covering issues change, there might be room to change the custom. So Chasam Sofer doesn't pursue that. He doesn't read the Magen Avraham with us. He just references us to look at the Magen Avraham. And then when I did, I found out that piece of it that would be something worth raising as a question to think about. And then the Rush is quoted in the Beirei Smag, who says that when we say that a minhag is oker halacha, that a minhag can even go against the halacha, that's even if most opinions think that something is prohibited and the Gemara allows it, and then the Gemara helps that opinion, and then other books say that something's okay. We say minhag oker halacha. Devadai kach kiblu avotenu ish mipi ish. That when we see a minhag, we can assume that it's a long-standing tradition going all the way back that this is okay. And that's another interesting claim about minhag, and one that's just a claim. Right? When are we sure that practices that we find in communities are definitely a function of a good tradition that went back to somebody who was worthy of establishing that tradition, right? That's the claim. It's certainly true of some minhagim, but it seems to me that one could argue that there are at least other minhagim, and I'm not talking about hair covering at all, but there are certainly are minhagim, there are common communal practices which don't seem to have any basis in anything. The Chasam Sofer is talking about where you have a contradiction between some kinds of literature and the Talmud, but I'm talking about, I think there are cases where you have things that aren't based in anything, and I'm not sure that we would always assume, and the Rush is writing in the Smug, which is quoting the Smug, which is, you know, many hundreds of years ago. But now our times today, for example, if I came to a place where there wasn't a strong tradition of Judaism, and they had some practice and whatever, I'm not sure that I would necessarily assume that they had a tradition going back. And that's what the Rush then says also, by the way, I'm sorry, the Chasam Sofer then says, V'davka minhag shed yaseid al pi vatikin. It has to be a minhag that was started by somebody who was of authority to start it, like the Mordechai says, but a minhag which we don't have any source for it, then it might be that it's just an error. So once you know that minhag can just be an error, you have to always think about those questions. So the Chasam Sofer is assuming, for example, that the women around him who are covering everything are following the Zohar, and that's why they're doing it, and therefore it's a custom and it becomes a firm custom. That may or may not be true. What if it were to be true that women just misunderstood and thought they had to cover everything and nobody had ever told them that? That would not be the same kind of a minhag. You'd have to think about those kinds of questions. But bringing it all to conclusion, the Chasam Sofer says that in his times, in his places, any hair, anywhere on the head, on the forehead, with a married woman, even in her room, is an erva. And if she has, unless she has some kind of a scarf or a kerchief over it, and if she's going out in public, she needs in addition a hat. That's what he got from the source that we have. But the one line of hair between her ear and her forehead, if she wants to put limestone on it in a place, and she lives in a place where she does it, where that's what people do, that's not an erva. However, in our places, he says, where they follow the Zohar and they follow the Rashbam, so therefore there's no machloket and it's all usher and you can't do it. That was his conclusion. That was his assumption. Had you been living in his time, certainly that's the psak he would have given you. But I think along the way for us, he has raised all sorts of interesting issues about minhag and how long we follow them and when we follow them, when we don't follow them. And that will be the end of our discussion of this responsum day regarding women's hair covering, but regarding much more than that, about issues of when and what changes halacha for the 16th of Sivan. Have a good day.